glad you're here. Fellowship's sweeter, knowing you're near. It's so good to see you. I hope that it's fair. Everyone loves you. We're glad you're here.
Welcome to Mark and Friends. I'm your host, Donna Leland. And today we are going to talk all things marriage, and we're going to celebrate that special union that God created and established all the way back in the garden. Coming up February 7th through the 14th is designated National Marriage Week. And today on Mark and Friends, we get to talk with the national spokesperson, Arlene Pellicane, and she's going to walk us through some of the challenges, but also the delights of being married. Thank you so much, Arlene, for joining us.
So much fun to be on. Thanks so much, Donna.
Not only are you the spokesperson for this very special week, but also you have just come out with a new book, and this is from Moody Publishers, Making Marriage Easier, How to Love and Like Your Spouse for Life. So it sounds like you've done your research, and you are packed with some great information and some great tips for us. But let's go back to that National Marriage Week. How did that get established? And is that like a federal holiday? Is it a federal designation?
It is not a federal designation, but it was begun 30 years ago. So it's kind of fun to have the 30-year mark in the UK, actually. And it was a campaign and a movement to unite people around marriage, to unite communities, clergy, married people, to declare, hey, you know what? Marriage is a good thing. And it's something that's good for us as individuals, and it's also something good for societies. And so this has now been taken by Marriage Initiative, which is out of Houston, that has really shepherded this project. And just think of like National Ice Cream Day. It's kind of like, let's go get ice cream, you know, yeah. And we love ice cream. And National Marriage Week is to help shift the culture to think, wait a minute, marriage? It gets a lot of flack, but it's actually a really amazing thing if you are in a happy marriage, and helping young people to see that marriage is not old-fashioned, but it's actually a really good choice for your future, strengthening existing marriages. So it is a celebration of marriage.
It really is. And, you know, it's so interesting. That really is the heart of people. They want to be in that special union, yeah, with another person. Now, you talk about four key marriage decisions that make marriage easier. I mean, that, yeah, just sings to our soul. Marriage is not always easy, but what are those key decisions that could help,
yes,
us?
My husband and I have been married for 27 years. And as we look back in writing this book, Making Marriage Easier, it was like, what has made this not easy, but easier? And the first decision was to play by the rules, to really communicate, like, this is the culture of our marriage. This is what's okay. This is what's not okay. And we play by these rules. And just like in a game, if the goals changed or you got to the teammates changed and you know, you're confused, yeah, that's not good. So you want things, it's clarity. Yeah. And God's rules, obviously, like, what does the Bible say about marriage and how can we obey those rules? And if we do, we know our marriage will be blessed. So the first decision was play by the rules. The second was give thanks every day, that if you can have that heart of gratitude, that same heart that when you met your spouse, when you married your spouse, you know, when you got married, you weren't like, oh, brother, this guy is awful, right? You were like so thankful.
Yes.
You couldn't believe that you found each other. So how can we continue with that heart of gratitude, carrying that into 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years of marriage? And we know it's the will of God to give thanks. And so just really cultivating that, giving that priority in your marriage. The third decision is serve your spouse. Real popular, I know, but it's this idea of, instead of thinking, well, what are you going to do for me?
Right.
I've already done this for you. What are you going to do for me? And I'm disappointed. Instead of that attitude, the attitude is, hey, how could I make your life easier today? Is there anything I could do for you? And guess what? That makes you a lot easier to live with, and that's going to rub off on your spouse. So serve your spouse. And then the last decision four is take fun seriously. So many times we think, well, fun is for vacation. Fun is when we're empty nesters, but there's nothing fun about marriage right now. It's all problems and conflict and bills and stress. And so we need to go back to think, wait, we have to say, wait, it's actually a serious issue that we do actually need to be having fun together, because the fun is what wove us together in the first place. You didn't date and then decide to marry your person because they were just okay.
Yeah.
Right. You were like, that is the most fun person I know. Like, I have fun with that person. So this is that permission to say, you can go have fun. That's actually important.
That's such, those are such good words. I know my marriage with my husband started, you know, in the mini golf era.
Oh, it's so cute.
He loved playing mini golf.
I hated it. But when you were dating, you were probably okay with it because you were spending time, right?
Absolutely.
It's like you're spending time together.
Yeah. And he would just, you know, demolish me. But then that was, you know, fun for him. So I did it. And then he's done amazing amount of things that have been fun for me.
Yeah.
Riding bikes through glacier, which very painful. You know, just so many crazy things that, but he's been willing to do that.
Mm.
And again, push himself out of his comfort zone, because that's really what marriage can do for us. And it's discomfort. And, you know, and that's just a part of it. We don't want that part. But, it, you know, serving another person in their love language, it can become uncomfortable. But what lessons can we bring from that?
It's so true. You know, what you were saying about doing the thing for your spouse that you wouldn't necessarily choose to do yourself, but you're okay with it. The saying I like is, if you like it, I'll try it.
Yes.
If you like it, I'll try it. And you know, you might try something, and like skiing, my family loves to ski and I have tried it immensely, but we've, after many years and many terror-filled moments for me, we've decided you guys ski and I'll have the dinner ready when you come back. It just works so much better.
Yeah.
So if you try, and that's the comfort zone, right? It is the trying. It is the growing. It's pushing you past. It's, you're not root bound. It's that you're not just doing, you're not the same person 40 years ago from now than you are today. You're growing. You're learning. You're growing in grace. You're growing in forgiveness. So all of those things. When my husband and I were newlyweds, we lived in Dallas, Texas, and we went to the Dallas Arboretum, and we paid the ticket and went through the Arboretum, and there was like this 10-foot fence. And my husband says, my new husband says, hey, why don't we jump that fence? Because look, there's our car right there. And then we don't have to go through the whole park. We could just jump the fence and get in our car. And I'm like, I am not jumping a fence. I don't physically know how to do that. And that's not right. And but he talked me into, we should try this. And I had one leg on one side, one leg on the other. I was terrified. I'm 5'9", so I'm pretty tall. So he's like, I don't see the problem. Just swing your leg over and just kind of jump a little. So he was frustrated. I was frustrated. People were starting to come into the picture. I was so embarrassed. Do they know I'm climbing out and not climbing in?
Oh,
you know, I was
wow.
just so embarrassed. And finally, I was in a clump on the other side. And I couldn't believe that my amazing husband, right, had put me through that. But I, it's like this word picture to me of growth. Like your spouse makes you do things you wouldn't normally do. And when you're on the other side of it, you are stronger and you have learned skills that you did not previously have. And so even though we live in this culture of comfort at all costs, that's why we just sit on our phones and scroll all day, because it doesn't ask us for anything. It's very comfortable. We, marriage calls us to discomfort, and it's really good for us so we can become mature.
Mm, such a good word. Such a good picture. I can just see you, you know, dangling there between life and death. And that's hilarious, you know.
He's like, did you never take a PE class? Like, why can you not do this? And I thought to myself, I can't believe you're making me. So that's marriage, that you each think you are right.
Yes.
And you kind of are. Yes.
Yes, but be willing to be a little uncomfortable in the moment. Like recently, my husband signed up to be a part of the Sons of the American Revolution, you know, and he convinced me to become a daughter of the American Revolution. So we both went back in history, found that we had a patriot that served. And at first I was like, okay, I'm just going to sign up and put a little plaque on the wall, right? I don't want to do anything. I just wasn't interested in doing anything. Well, little by little, I got the costume, you know, I go to the meetings. Now I'm planning this whole school America 250 educational program,
goodness.
You know, But it's just so funny. I would do none of this if it hadn't been for him.
I love it.
It's all in my wheelhouse. It's just, you know, but I did kind of go, you know, screaming and kicking. But in the end, I'm so glad. Yeah. And I think that keeps marriage vibrant. I think that prevents my husband and I from just feeling like roommates.
Yeah.
You know, speak to that. What are some other things we can do?
Yes. That's new discoveries, right? That you're like, now I'm a son and a daughter of the revolution. So that newness, I think is really good to help keep us from feeling like roommates, like, oh, we're doing something new. So it's not just the same old. Years ago for one of my books, I interviewed Dr. Marjorie Blanchard and her husband, Ken. They're both business entrepreneurs. And her husband, Ken, wrote The 1 Minute Manager. And she left me with this. She said, what's new on your marriage resume in the last 2 years? So I thought that was so good, just thinking, we're always thinking of our career, and as a parent, you're always forced to grow because of the stages. But in your marriage, what are you adding new? So I loved that question. And so be thinking of what can be new. And then to avoid this whole roommate thing, do things that roommates do not do. So that's like kissing and holding hands and giving each other the googly eyes, you know?
Yes.
And it doesn't, and it can just be, I love Dr. Arthur Brooks talks about the oxytocin express, just the, how do you get that bond so quickly? And just two simple things, eye contact and physical touch. So if you literally just, instead of kind of doing the things at the dishes and then just talking to your spouse, you know, and not really looking at them, if you just like look at them, so eye contact is one, and then touch, like if you held their hands and said, hey, honey, I really love you. You're doing a great job at work. I just wanted you to know that. I mean, that takes 10 seconds. But roommates don't do that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if they come home from work, that you hug them, that you kiss them, it's okay, roommates don't do that. So just start doing these little things that roommates don't do, even when you don't feel like doing it. And then after a little bit, you'll go, oh yeah, we're not roommates. We are lovers after all.
Yeah, I was thinking about when we all, you know, get married, we've got our expectations about happiness. And that happiness is all bound up in that other person. And they're going to make us happy. And we are going to be happy. And like you said, that, what is it, oxytocin?
Yeah.
That gets, you know, and all that wonderful dopamine and serotonin and all of the feels.
Right.
That come with it. And yet, a little ways into it, there is this disappointment. You know, we had made an appointment with happiness. And we got dissed. Right?
Yes.
We no longer have that appointment. And how do we work through that? How do we focus in on what's still important in our marriage and not just all about me?
What's funny is we think that's about our spouse. Our spouse disappointed us. Our spouse didn't put the appointment on his calendar like we think it's him. But it's really us. That no one is in charge of your happiness but yourself. You know, just flip that. If your spouse was expecting you to make him happy and all his happiness was riding on you, you would feel like, hey, you cannot put that expectation on me.
Me too.
And for us to realize that, you know, a certain address, a certain bank account, a certain wardrobe, vacation, way your spouse treats you, all of those things are not going to fill that void that only God can fill, that completeness, that purpose, that perfect love that only God can fill. And so we cannot look towards the idol. We can make it an idol of marriage or of parenting to fill that part that God only fills. So first of all, it's kind of getting that straight of, Lord, my hope and expectation is in you, not my marriage. And then it is just kind of talking to yourself and adjusting, okay, let me see what are more reasonable expectations of my spouse and let me communicate them and just always turn it around. Would I be okay if my spouse was asking me, you know, to do these things?
Yeah.
And that kind of helps keep us in check. But I do think it is good to have hope and expectation. So I'm not saying like, oh, forget the expectations. This thing's going to be awful. No. So have more realistic expectations. Think of your hope and your satisfaction, your contentment coming from God. Because if you come into marriage discontent because you're single and you think marriage is going to fix that, then you're going to continue in marriage to be discontent. You have to find that contentment. It's not the status of your marital status that's going to do that for you, but also have that hope. I mean, statistically, Brad Wilcox at the University of Virginia, they have shown through research that you get a 29% happiness boost as a college grad, and most students, right, most young people are told, go get yourself a college degree, that'll make you happy. Go get yourself a good job, that'll make you happy. That gives you a 51% boost. But just being married gives you a 102% boost, and being happily married gives you a 219% boost. And this is a message that's not being told to 20-somethings, that, hey, that's great, get your degree, get a job, that's wonderful, but hey, while you're in your 20s, look for someone to do the rest of your life with. And when you find and commit and make a vow to that person, you will secure yourself the most amazing future that a job and coming home to a little TV dinner, right, could never give you. And kids need to be told that.
They really do. What a beautiful message. And I think deep down they know it. It's unfortunately, maybe they've had in their experience not a lot of people who
you don't see it yourself.
Are living that out.
Yes.
Now, I see it in our little church. We've got one couple, been married 60 years.
Yeah.
And they've had a rough go at it. You know, I mean, they've had it all. And yet they're together and they're adorable, you know?
Yes.
So I want to be that really cute little old couple.
Totally.
That's just my goal. And
that's so going to be you guys, the son and daughter of the revolution.
Yes.
And all the other things that you will be doing.
Craziness. Absolutely. It is a team. And I hope that for our listeners, if, you know, you still have your spouse. I know our listeners, a lot of them have lost their spouse. And so as they listen to all of this information, they're going through their history that they lived. And I'm sure that they're seeing some of these points was why they stayed with that spouse. And they can give thanks for all those years when they prioritized each other, when they realized that each other wasn't God and that they chose to honor the Lord. So we're celebrating that as well, dear listener.
And for you to tell your stories to younger people, right, to nieces and nephews or children or grandchildren, so we know your stories.
That's a great point, Arlene. I didn't even think about that.
But
pass on the wins and show people it's possible. It's not without its moments. Be honest with them, you know. But that's great. Now, we know one of the reasons of marriage is to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. And the two shall become one flesh, and those little one fleshes start running around, and they become a priority because it's now our job to keep this little person alive,
right,
clean and fed, and that's just exhausting. But in the midst of it, we still have to be married, and we still have a spouse that is going to need us to love them. So how do we play that out?
Such a good question. When baby makes three, you know, how does the marriage do? And then baby makes four, five, six, how does the marriage do? And so I get it. We have three kids. They're 21, 19, and 16. And when they first come into the world, they need a lot of help. And it's all hands on deck with that baby. But what we need to do as parents is then start shifting as that baby gets older, that we realize, oh, our little baby, who might be 5, 10, or 15, can do a whole lot more than we are giving them credit for. And we need to back away. We need to let our kids play and be more independent. We need to give permission to say, oh, you know what? Mommy and daddy are going on a date night and you're going to go to a babysitter, or you're going to go to grandma's house, or we're going to, you know, go to our friend's house and they're going to watch you. And then next week we're going to watch their family, you know, whatever it is, let them see you dating. So make it a priority that you're still spending time only with your spouse. And maybe you don't do this. So maybe this is like twice a year you do it. And then the next year you do it four times a year. And then you get to like, hey, let's go out once a month. But just don't give it up. Yeah. Keep being with your spouse. This might look like 5 minutes when your spouse gets home and you're reconnecting and you tell your kids, hey, mommy and daddy need to talk on the couch for a few minutes and then we'll play with you. You know, that they see that, oh, mommy and daddy need time too. And it's really the kindest thing thing you can do for your kids so that they grow up and see, oh, mommy and daddy like each other. Mommy and daddy are important to each other. You know, when we as parents bend over backwards and we do everything for our kids and we're exhausted and we don't get along with our spouses because all we're doing is catering to the kids, well, no wonder kids grow up and they think, well, I don't want to do that, like be a chauffeur and a cook and do all these things and have no, not even barely like my spouse. Like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
So really the kindest thing you can do is make that investment of time and then shift your mindset. You know, it's so natural, especially I think as mothers, our mindset is naturally, I am the ally of my children. I mean, that is so natural. If you need something, I will buy it. If you forgot something, I'm really tempted to bring it. You know,
yeah.
I want to help you. But with our spouses, we're like, yeah, you're a grown up. You can help yourself.
Get it yourself.
So that shift of mindset, who am I treating the best in my family? So how can I treat my husband really in the best way, or at least as good as I treat my children? And then realizing, wow, someday my kids are going to grow up and they will probably have their own families. I need to stick with my number one, which is my husband.
Yes.
So have that perspective. Your kids, they are going to grow up, they are going to leave, but your husband, your spouse, that's who's going to be there and that's who you really need to care for.
And not take them for granted.
Don't take them for granted.
I'm learning that now, how important he is. And, you know, just trying to serve him. He's pretty self-sufficient. I do throw a plate of warm food at him, once a day.
Yeah.
But I've gone to making sure he gets his coffee in the morning, right?
Yeah.
When the microwave continues to beep and I realize his coffee's in there, and I'm like, you know what? I can bring him his coffee. And just trying to up my game
in that
department and just not seeing him as a resource for him to come alongside and fund my endeavor, but now I want to come alongside and be a part of his endeavors. We're talking with Arlene Pellicane, and she is now the spokesperson for an event coming up. It's the National Marriage Week. It's February 7th through the 14th. She's also an author and a speaker on so many different levels. Arlene, if someone wanted to get a hold of you, how could they do so?
Yes, I have a Happy Home podcast where we talk about marriage and parenting. And then you can go to marriageweek.org to find out all the different things that Marriage Week can offer you to support your marriage, from conversation starters, date night ideas, and then a whole week's worth of broadcasts that you can watch absolutely free. You just sign up for them. So all of that is at marriageweek.org. And you'll also find my book, Making Marriage Easier, there.
Yeah, there are a lot of great resources coming out of you, Arlene, and we really appreciate you taking part of your busy day and just sharing with us your heart and your love for marriages. Thanks so much for joining us on Mark and Friends.
It's been so much fun, Donna. Thank you so much.